we as the educator in there are kind of always the architects in creating competent roles for all.
Welcome back to Upper Grand District School Board's Social Learning Road Trip. For our last episode of this series, we are welcoming back Linda K. Murphy, author of the Co-Regulation Handbook, as well as our co-host, Kristen Smith, fellow speech-language pathologist, and an additional guest host for this episode, Amanda Pinneger, special education resource teacher and learning resource teacher at Ottawa Crescent Public School here in Upper Grand. Welcome, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome back, Linda.
It is great to be back. This has been so much fun to join you for all these episodes.
We have learned so much, and it has been such a great learning curve for us, not only with technology, but also with learning about co-regulation, reviewing declarative language. And so we are excited to jump in this time now that we have honed our skills in co-regulation by adjusting complexity and troubleshooting and learning what scaffolding is and finding that edge of competency to now apply those skills to the practical environment of our classrooms. So we thought it would be great to bring back our case studies that we talked about back when we were in the declarative language episodes. So I'm going to review our first case study, and then I want us to work together in finding ways that we can integrate what we've learned around co-regulation. So this was our student in grade four. We have them in a mainstream classroom with some academic challenges. They've been diagnosed with ADHD, but they're not currently medicated. Their assessment of their language skills places them at the moderate range for difficulties with a developmental language disorder. They had difficulties with specific expressive language, including sentence formulation and word-finding vocabulary. And they face challenges in the area of reading and writing. Reading assessments indicate that they are below grade level, struggling with decoding. And the student also tends to have some reading-related activity avoidance, exhibit some frustration when faced with reading tasks. They often need multiple prompts to begin work, will wander, take peers' materials, frequently leave the classroom. They might be found hiding behind doors or in the bathroom. They might also yell at staff for them to be quiet. And we're going to add in that they probably are dealing with some social learning differences, and that's making it challenging for them to, again, have friends, make friends, work through some of these later developing skills that we've talked around, things like executive functioning and things like that. So with that in mind, let's say we want to try and integrate some co-regulation, some competent roles for this student, and we were to start in the classroom, maybe around some of those reading activities and their avoidance. What are some ideas that we could do to help with their co-regulation?
Yeah, and I know we talked about this way back with only declarative language. And as I look at this case study example again, you know, this is one of those students that what we say or the language that we use is not going to be enough to support their engagement because so many things are hard for them in there. So I am just really going to take a step back and think about what are roles that I can create for this student within the activity that we're doing that will be competent for them. And what is going to be competent for them in the classroom setting when maybe when everybody's reading together is going to be different than the competent role maybe when they're working on reading instruction in a more individual or small group setting. So imagine we're in a whole group setting. The level of challenge is going to be less that I present with them because my main goal is to create a role for them where they can be competent in that setting. So it might be giving them opportunities to read that we know they can manage quite well. Or the teacher could also really establish a role for kids as listeners and thinkers and know that reading out loud, for example, doesn't have to be the only active role in the class, but part of reading is also listening when other people read or following along. So maybe the teacher could say, you know, someone could be the reader to start and the other students are going to be follow alongers or are going to be listeners and thinkers so that we can imagine, again, just creating a role where that child will feel competent and therefore be willing to engage and to stay engaged and ideally stay regulated because they feel grounded in their role in that moment.
Yeah, and I love that you talked about the differences that might occur for their reading expectation based on whether they're reading in front of the whole class or reading with the class watching versus reading one-on-one with an adult in a separate room. Because you do talk about this idea of adjusting complexity around the number of people. And I think that is a really important piece, not only with this scenario, but when we're looking at all of our learners who might be struggling with co-regulation. Again, this idea that we have different variables we can play with that might really help to support them when it comes to their finding success in those roles.
I really liked how you talked about feeling competent. And once they feel competent in that role, how can we then weave in declarative language into that framework?
So I think in this instance, declarative language might be the teacher really speaking out loud about what's going on. So observations they might have, roles that they're perceiving that the different students have, validating all of them. As they're reading along, it might even be making really transparent where we are in the text for the kids that maybe it can be harder to find it to get started. So it might be something like, okay, we're going to start at the top of the page on the left. The first word is such and such, instead of something that's less informative, such as turn to page 10. So turn to page 10, you know, implied in that is we're going to start reading at page 10. But for the child who might need a little bit more information to ground them in their role, that extra declarative language to guide them in that moment more specifically might be really helpful. So that student knows what to do. It also can be something like, okay, we're going to be turning the page soon so that that student can get ready to do the next step. And again, it could just be outlining those roles as we move along. Like, I can tell a lot of you are engaged listeners while so-and-so is our reader. So again, just validating and saying out loud the roles as they occur.
Yeah, and I love that even though sometimes when we see a child who has a developmental language disorder, we assume that we need to simplify the language. And sometimes that might be confused with this idea that simplifying the language doesn't mean less overall instruction. It might be rephrasing in a way that is easier for that student to understand. And again, I like this idea of this, rather than saying turn to page 10, giving them a little bit more context, you know, like the idea we're going to flip forward, we're going to count 10 pages, we're going to look to the top of the page. Like, those are really good cues that for a child who really is having a hard time feeling successful, those smaller steps that working together with them, maybe even coming in to help support them. Like, I'm going to help you find where we left off and you can help me by finding the first word. Like, again, that partnership really does come into play. And I really could see that reluctant reader having more success with that kind of mindset.
Yeah. And I was remembering, so our student in the case study is grade four. And I know teachers do it a lot too, but just again, like weaving all these ideas together prior to reading or along the way when you're reading, even just to use declarative language to recap what we remember, to recap what we just learned, to make predictions moving forward. And knowing that, you know, sometimes the teacher might be asking those questions to invite the students to think, but it's also okay if the teacher just narrates what they're thinking as a model of what this process looks like. So I remember last week when we read, this is what happened and this is where we left off and these were the really important things for us to hold on to. So even just really pulling that out more explicitly for the kids who maybe can't yet do it on their own. And knowing that as the teacher does it, they're just providing this really solid language model of how this process unfolds. Whereas when it's more question answer, you know, you're calling on some kids to share the information, but for the kids who really need it, we want to make sure they also get that really strong model that also can be provided by the teacher.
And once we're finding success with the adult-teacher interactions and that relationship there, how can we transfer that learning to more peer-to-peer interactions? So specifically, in my role right now, we're working with peer coaches as I'm teaching a class with students with developmental disabilities. So we have peer coaches that tend to be the same age or a couple years older. And how can we kind of work them into the role to then kind of gain those peer-to-peer interactions? And when do you know that they're ready for that?
So with this type of thing, you know, what I think about is we as the educator in there are kind of always the architects in creating competent roles for all. So we're thinking about our student who's vulnerable and we want them to have a competent role. But as we invite peer coaches to come in, they probably don't always know what the best role for them will be, and therefore for the individual that they're coaching. So in those situations, I also use a lot of declarative language to guide the coach or to narrate and make transparent for them the competent, authentic, contingent roles that I see unfolding between them and that student. So to give a concrete example, it could be something like, okay, I want you to read with so-and-so. How about to start? You are the reader and your partner or the student can be the book holder and page turner. And we could just start like that. So that would be a complementary co-regulatory pattern, like we talked about in a prior episode. And then it could move to something like, okay, now that you're in your groove, sharing in this reading together, the next thing I want you to practice doing with the student that you're coaching is maybe just taking turns reading. And it could be page to page, paragraph to paragraph, like really whatever reading level will create that just right challenge for the student. But I think essentially for the peer coaches, you want to create a competent role for them as a coach to the student, but you're making it all really transparent by using declarative language to guide that peer coach on how they fit in or can best support the student that they're working with.
Okay, thank you for that. I like how you really clarified that even though it's not necessarily a teacher to child interaction there, but you're still kind of modeling that and leading that and kind of building that structure for the peer-to-peer relationships.
Right. Yeah. And I do find, you know, we have all these eager, wonderful older students who want to help, but they don't necessarily know how best to help unless we coach them and guide them on all those pieces.
Yeah, Linda, I wanted to explore a little bit more about the peer-to-peer interactions through the discussion, a little bit more about the student we had talked about in an earlier episode when we were chatting about declarative language. The student I'm thinking about is our student in kindergarten, and they don't have a diagnosis, but they do have social-emotional concerns. Communication skills seem to be age-appropriate, but the school team believes that there may be some difficulties with understanding of language in the busy classroom environment. The student is often dysregulated and no seems to be a trigger for this child. Unstructured times can be really hard, especially recess. And so I'm wondering how we can set the student up for success in these less structured and less supervised environments like recess. Could be outdoor time or indoor time.
So with recess, there's different things that I'm thinking about. Like we always want to let kids get the movement and the sensory experiences that they need and the downtime they need, because that will help them manage and be ready for the rest of the day. So that's always an important thing to think about and judgment to make in the moment around whether to allow the child just that free time to explore, to have downtime, whatever it might be. But then as you think about creating and fostering peer interactions, we want to always carve out or create and then invite kids to join different opportunities where, I'm going to go back to it, they'll have a competent role alongside their classmates. So on the playground, I definitely go back to those co-regulatory frameworks. I think about on the playground, I might think about parallel. Just knowing that, for example, two kids swinging alongside each other can be really, really nice. Like they don't have to be talking to each other, but if they're swinging alongside each other, visually referencing each other at times, smiling, noticing each other, like that can be a really wonderful peer interaction opportunity. And we as the educator can help spotlight that just by adding declarative language, either in the moment or after the fact, by saying something like, wow, I saw you swinging next to your buddy out there on the playground, and I saw you smiling as you noticed each other. That was a really nice time that you had with your friend. So even though there's not necessarily that back and forth, those back and forth exchanges happening, know that that can be a really important and connecting peer experience for some of our kiddos. Other activities might be reciprocal, where kids are taking turns on the slide. Like, we probably see that type of thing more often. And supporting kids in that way might be just helping them notice when it's safe to go using declarative language. So if a teacher is standing near the slide, they might say something like to the child at the top of the slide, like, oh, you know what? I notice your friend is not yet at the bottom. Let's wait a second till they get out of the way, and then it's safe for you to go. Sometimes with that type of exchange, I also might create a tighter co-regulatory partnership by having one child be the ready, set, go person, and then the other person is the slider. So at the bottom of the slide, you could say, okay, now you're the ready, set, go guy. Can you say ready, set, go? And then your friend will know when to go. And sometimes kids really like that, and it creates that competent, authentic contingency between that that typically faster moving flow on the playground. And just one other quick example that I find can be really nice on the playground is even something like sidewalk chalk. So kids could color or draw alongside each other. It could be a parallel activity, or it could move into a more collaborative activity if they're drawing something together, or if they're playing a game like tic-tac-toe or hangman or something like that. So there's just lots of different moments where you can think about how to create competent, authentic, contingent roles on the playground. If we kind of just have our eye out, or just enter open-minded, and also know it's okay if these exchanges only last, for 5 minutes or less, because we're going to spotlight after the fact that memory that they formed with their friend. So that will help them feel good about it and look forward to it the next day.
Yeah, I really like that idea of the spotlighting those successful interactions, because I think that a lot of times our students may not even know what a successful interaction may even be. So using our declarative language to highlight that for them is, I believe, really important.
Yeah.
Thanks for those great examples.
Well, then I'm thinking it's just where peer interactions are at play. That's where we're just really pulling all these concepts together in a really dynamic way. So it's exciting to get to this point too and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I just think about the journey that we've been on and how wonderful it is for us to now get to this point where we can apply not only our learning around declarative language, but also around co-regulation. I think that there's a lot of really great learning that as a board, we will continue to do over the coming years. And we thank you so much, Linda, for joining us at the beginning of our journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I've loved being on this trip with you.
And thank you again, Amanda, for joining us and helping us apply it to our classrooms.
Well, thank you for having me.
And again, we highly encourage everyone who has listened to this podcast series that they go and find themselves a copy of either one of Linda's handbooks, either the declarative language handbook or the co-regulation handbooks. And you can find them pretty much everywhere books are sold. They are quick reads. They are really easy to digest and apply right away. So we encourage you to support Linda's work through that. And you can check out more about her. Linda, where can people find out more about the work you're doing online?
Thanks for asking. So declarativelanguage.com is the best place to find me. I have a lot of resources on my website that are handouts, that people can download. There's recordings. There's a lot of blog posts, frequently asked questions, some trainings on there as well. So hopefully everybody can find something that is helpful to them at declarativelanguage.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for everything. And we hope everyone continues on that learning journey with us.
Thank you for listening to the Social Learning Road Trip, a podcast presented by Upper Grand District School Board. For educators within our board, you can access show notes and links to our other podcast episodes on our SharePoint page under Innovation Lab. Other listeners can find our podcast and additional information on our parent website at www.ugdsb.ca www.declarativelanguage.org/CLS parents. If you would like to find out more information about declarative language and co-regulation, please visit Linda Murphy's site at declarativelanguage.com.